Celebrating the music and artists you've loved on iHeartRadio over the past year and giving you an exclusive first look at the biggest new songs coming in the summer of 24.
Witness music history. iHeart Innovator Award recipient, Beyoncé.
iHeart Icon Award recipient, Cher.
And performances by Justin Timberlake,
Green Day,
TLC,
Jelly Roll,
Lainey Wilson,
Tate McRae,
and your host, Ludacris.
Our 2024 iHeartRadio Music Awards, Monday, April 1st.
Watch on Fox, starting at 8 p.m., 7 central.
Bring a little optimism into your life with The Bright Side, a new kind of daily podcast from Hello Sunshine, hosted by me, Danielle Robey,
and me, Simone Boyce. Every weekday, we're bringing you conversations about culture, the latest trends, inspiration, and so much more.
I am so excited about this podcast, The Bright Side. You guys are giving people a chance to shine a light on their lives, shine a light on a little advice that they want to share.
Listen to The Bright Side on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search The Bright Side.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets
and help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters every afternoon. I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen.
And I'm David Gura. Listen to The Big Take and Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
On the night of December 30th, 1974, two armed men entered a liquor store on the outskirts of Oklahoma City. They ordered one clerk to empty the cash register and fatally shot the other one in the head. As the surviving clerk nervously fumbled the cash, one of the assailants shot 18-year-old Belinda Brown in the head as well. But miraculously, the girl survived, and she described her shooters as black men over 6 feet tall and 200 pounds. No identifications were made until 5 weeks later when two young men, Glenn Simmons and Don Roberts, took part in a lineup. Even though both young men fell well shy of the described height and weight, Belinda Brown's ID was enough to convince a jury. And in 1975, murder in Oklahoma carried an automatic sentence of death. But this is wrongful conviction. Welcome back to Wrongful Conviction, where we're covering a robbery homicide out of Edmond, Oklahoma, that took place while our guest of honor, Glenn Simmons, lived hundreds of miles away, just outside of New Orleans. But before we try to make sense of all that, I'd like to introduce his attorney, Joe Norwood. Joe, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
And thank you for helping win Glenn's release after more than 48 years, one of the longest terms of any previous guest or anybody in the long and terrible history of wrongful convictions in this country. I think Tyrone Clark is the only other innocent person that we know of who has served as long or longer, and I hope no one else ever comes close. So Glenn Simmons, welcome.
Thank you.
Now, this happened on the outskirts of Oklahoma City in a town called Edmond, same as Julius Jones in 1999, by the way, and we'll have his story linked in the episode description as we continue to seek justice there.
Everyone in Oklahoma is aware of that case.
But the crime in Glenn's story took place 25 years earlier, way back in 1974.
When Glenn's case happened, Edmond was a sundown community. Sundown meaning, if you're black, you better get out before sundown. And most preferably not even show up there. It has changed dramatically since then into fourth largest, one of the wealthiest cities in Oklahoma now.
But back in 74, when the crime in question happened, Glenn hadn't even arrived in this sundown town yet. He was still living and was actually in Harvey, Louisiana, where he had been born back in 1953.
1 year before Brown versus education, desegregation of the schools. However, schools wasn't really desegregated until 1968 in the town where I grew up at, you know. Harvey, Louisiana, it's on the west bank of the Mississippi River in New Orleans. Grew up in a very large family, 9 boys and 4 girls. Went to a all-black school in the neighborhood. A pretty good childhood, not a whole bunch of drama.
Now, the crime in question occurred during that sleepy week between Christmas and New Year's of 1974. Glenn had just turned 21 years old, and his Aunt Dorothy, who lived in Edmond, Oklahoma, was back in Harvey for the holidays.
Auntie Dorothy, she would come for Christmas and New Year's. We had this tradition, what we call the Turkey Bowl. Every New Year's Eve, we would go to this high school, and our neighborhood guys would gather around and pick teams and play ball. And we did it that year. And thought I was a little sharp, little pool player at the time. So I hung out in the pool hall a lot. And we had some pool tournaments that weekend also. And this one particular time, Auntie Dorothy, she came. I decided to go back with her to Oklahoma, which was in January 1975. Yeah, I wasn't intending to stay. I was just coming to visit. But I found me a job within a few days, and I liked the job, so I decided to stay a little while longer.
However, before Glenn even arrived in Edmond, Oklahoma, a robbery and murder had occurred at a liquor store on December 30th, 1974.
Around 9:30 p.m., two perpetrators come into the Edmond liquor store and hold it up, demand the cash. One of the cashiers hands it over, and they shoot the other one in the head, who falls dead. As the cashier that was still alive was handing over the cash, an 18-year-old young lady walks in, and as soon as she walks past the two perpetrators, they shoot her in the back of the head. They grab the cash and run off.
The 18-year-old customer, Belinda Brown, ended up surviving, while 30-year-old Carolyn Sue Rogers died at the scene. The surviving cashier was named Norma Hankins.
Her initial statement to the police was, "I was busy looking at that gun. I don't know that I'll be able to give a good, accurate description." That is what she testified to at the preliminary hearing, and that's what she testified to at the jury trial.
As the police canvassed the area, a group of boys allegedly saw the getaway but didn't have anything useful for the police until many weeks later. Meanwhile, the 18-year-old customer, Belinda Brown, who had been shot in the head, was in critical condition.
She was in the hospital for about a week. She had surgery. The bullet was removed, and she ended up surviving. Not but a day or two after she got out of the hospital, she was interviewed by the police, and from the police report, quote unquote, if she thought about it anymore, it would get all jumbled up in her mind.
From what we understand, she wanted to give them any information she had as soon as possible. She described the assailants as two black men a little over 6 feet tall and 200 pounds. She was shown several lineups and initially only made partial identifications, like maybe the eyes of someone she viewed were similar to the assailants, but no concrete IDs. At this point, the investigation began to struggle.
When I got to Oklahoma, this Edmond liquor store murder had been going unsolved, and every day there was an article about the inadequacies of the police department, how they couldn't solve the crime, and it was coming to a dead end, and it was under a whole lot of pressure to solve those crimes. And I just happened to walk into it, you know, right into it.
During what was supposed to be just an extended visit with his aunt, Glenn attended a small get-together at a relative's home on the night of February 3rd into the 4th, when another robbery-homicide occurred in Oklahoma City, and by the 5th, police had two suspects in custody, Leonard and Delbert Patterson, who had been at the same party as Glenn.
They was at the party that night, and they left and went, did something. They come back half an hour later, kept on partying. So the next day, when they get arrested on the murder, they asked them where it was. They gave an alibi that they was at the party and asked who all was at the party. And they started arresting people as material witnesses and stuff like that.
In order to hold some of these material witnesses, the police, with no probable cause to do so, charged some of the people from the party as suspects in random open cases.
They arrested me on a bogus robbery case, which was dismissed right there on the spot. The woman who got robbed came to the station and said, "No, I ain't never seen that guy before."
Yeah, it's something they threw on him to make sure they could hold him.
At some point during this morass, where the police had all these young folks from the party still in custody, Leonard and Delbert Patterson, both of whom were about 6'2 and a little over 200 pounds, they eventually confessed to the February robbery homicide in Oklahoma City. But the Edmond liquor store robbery homicide in December remained an open case.
Now, check this out. If you look at the police report on February the 5th, February the 6th, Officer Strobert at the Oklahoma Police Department contacted Officer Garrett at the Edmond Police Department, and he told him, he said, "We got two suspects in custody, fit the description of the Edmond liquor store murder, and you need to come down and conduct an ID, right?" Now, I don't say who these suspects are. But they say they fit the description, the composite that Belinda Brown gave them, saying they were 6 feet, 200 some pounds, right? Totally different from my description. I was like 150 pounds or 5'8". But I was asked to participate in the lineup. I didn't know I had the right to refuse or the right to a lawyer. Went in, got in the lineup, and was told that I was picked out the lineup. And Belinda Brown, she was so sure, she called the detective's house later on that night and told him, said, "The more I think about it, the more positive I am that it was number six." They asked us, well, can you come up tomorrow and make another ID? She came back the next day. She said, I picked the same two I picked the day before.
Belinda Brown was very confident in her choice of position six in the first lineup, but only became more confident in her second choice the following day. And on February 8, 1975, both Glenn Simmons and another young man from the party, Don Roberts, were charged with capital murder. With no bail available, they awaited trial from jail, and Glenn hired private counsel.
He was a friend of my aunt's, Henry Floyd. I think I gave him like $2,200, which was a lot of money at that time. He didn't do nothing. He didn't file no pretrial motions or nothing in the case.
And perhaps he felt confident considering the glaring difference between Glenn and Don's smaller statures and the over 6 feet tall, 200-pound assailants, a discrepancy that seemed to strike a chord with Belinda Brown at the preliminary hearing.
When she come to preliminary 3 or 4 weeks later, I'm sitting there next to Don Roberts in the prison uniform. It's written all over her face. I'm confused. She confused all the way. Every time she look at me, I'm looking at her. You got the wrong one. You know, that's what I'm saying, you know.
And she gets on the stand and she does identify them, but it's not a real confident ID.
She said, well, he looked it taller than and he looked it heavier, but he had a beard. He didn't have a beard.
And she gets impeached.
Not only was the defense attacking the credibility of the ID, but then entrusting the lineup report he had received from police, Oklahoma County Assistant Prosecutor Bob Mildfeld implied that perhaps after all that she'd been through, maybe Belinda Brown had just gotten a little confused about who she had ID'd.
When they kept trying to make it look like she was crazy, she was injured when she got shot in the head, she couldn't be sure, she got real defiant. Just 18 years old, and they're trying to tell her, well, you crazy, you don't know. And she knew she had made sure she got the right one. So she got real defiant, she put her back up, and would never back down until this day.
So the adversity only served to solidify the ID in Belinda Brown's mind. Meanwhile, one of the teenage boys who were interviewed back in December of 74 was now willing to say that he recognized Don Roberts from a car that had passed by the liquor store that night, and Glenn and Don were taken to trial in June of 75. Where the defense strategy focused on impeaching Belinda Brown, who was now even more confident in her ID.
And they had us to stand next to each other. She was 5'8", I was 5'8". He said, well, you lucky taller than him. And she said, well, he might have had on stack heel shoes. She was defiant because she knows she picked this. Anywhere in the world, I could have got to this defense table in her wildest dreams. And Mildfeld's wildest dream.
Meanwhile, six alibi witnesses made the trip from Harvey, Louisiana to testify about the pool tournament on December 30th and the Turkey Bowl the following day, which made it impossible for Glenn to have been in Edmond to commit this crime. No thanks to his attorney, Henry Floyd, though.
No, we put that together. My family put that together. What he did was he went to the court and solicited money for travel expenses and lodging and stuff and put that money in his pocket, and the people had to find their own way to get here. Six of them witnesses. He didn't even call them all. He said it would be redundant, so he didn't even bring all the witnesses up. But the police never did investigate none of the alibi witnesses and stuff that I gave him. You got a report saying they went to Dallas and looked at Don's. He had gave an alibi that he was in Dallas, and the detectives went to Dallas and checked out the alibi and came back inconclusive. They couldn't prove that he was in there, but they decided to say they couldn't prove that he was, you know?
With Glenn and Don's alibi defenses, coupled with the impeaching evidence against Belinda Brown, reasonable doubt had certainly been raised, and there was at least some hope for acquittal.
I thought I was going to walk up out of there. Nobody couldn't see no conviction. There was nothing to convict me on. It didn't last 2.5 days. You sent us to death in the electric chair. Yeah, I don't have to say any more about that, you know. Some wounds you let stay close, right?
Wrongful conviction has always given voice to innocent people in prison. Now we're expanding that voice to you. Call us at 833-207-4666 and leave us a message. Tell us how these powerful, often tragic stories make you feel. Outraged, inspired, motivated? We want to know. We may even include your story in a future episode. Call us, 833-207-4666.
Celebrating the music. music and artists you've loved on iHeartRadio over the past year and giving you an exclusive first look at the biggest new songs coming in the summer of 24.
Witness music history. iHeart Innovator Award recipient, Beyoncé.
iHeart Icon Award recipient, Cher.
And performances by Justin Timberlake,
Green Day,
TLC,
Jelly Roll,
Lainey Wilson,
Tate McRae,
and your host, Ludacris.
Our 2024 iHeartRadio Music Awards, Monday, April 1st.
Watch on Fox, starting at 8 p.m., 7 central.
Bring a little optimism into your life with The Bright Side, a new kind of daily podcast from Hello Sunshine, hosted by me, Danielle Robay,
and me, Simone Boyce. Every weekday, we're bringing you conversations about culture, the latest trends, inspiration, and so much more.
I am so excited about this podcast, The Bright Side. You guys are giving people a chance to shine a light on their lives, shine a light on a little advice that they want to share.
Listen to The Bright Side on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search The Bright Side.
For as long as I can remember, I've been fascinated by the depths of human potential and the incredible things that humans can do. So I became a cognitive scientist, studying all the ways in which we think, create, make decisions, and work toward becoming who we want to become. I'm Scott Barry Kaufman, host of the Psychology Podcast. I'm a cognitive scientist, and I've written 10 books and hundreds of articles on topics such as intelligence, creativity, well-being, narcissism, introversion, and education. The Psychology Podcast is a place where we investigate the different ways in which we can unlock human potential, and where I get to interview some of the most extraordinary and fascinating people, and we have real conversations about what it means to achieve success and what it means to be human. So join me, Scott Barry Kaufman, on the Psychology Podcast, where we investigate the depths of human potential. Listen to the Psychology Podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
At 75, they have what they call a mandatory death penalty. If they find you guilty of one, two, three elements of murder, like you kill a police or you kill somebody in the commission of a felony, you kill somebody at a certain age or something like that, then you was automatically given the death penalty, and the jury had no discretion in the rendering of the punishment because it was set by legislative act. Is automatic death penalty. That's one of the reasons why it was abolished.
In June of 1972, the Supreme Court ruled in Furman versus Georgia that the death penalty violated the 8th and 14th Amendments under certain circumstances, placing a four-year moratorium on executions until more challenges would bring about guidance on the matter.
U.S. Supreme Court stayed the death penalty across the country, saying the death penalty is being administered arbitrarily and capriciously. And so Oklahoma and several other states' response to that was, okay, you don't think that we administer the death penalty evenly and equally? Great. Well, we're just going to administer it to everyone that is convicted of first-degree murder. And so that's the statute that Glenn was convicted under. Now, that statute was appealed, and the Supreme Court came back and rendered a decision on a group of statutes, including Oklahoma's, saying, basically, no, guys, we didn't mean to kill everyone. We meant that you got to make it somewhat fair.
In 1976, the Supreme Court confirmed that capital punishment was still legal in the United States, but under limited circumstances. So the interim statutes in states like Oklahoma were nullified, and in their place came the aggravating and mitigating processes that we see used today, in which juries have a say in sentencing. The Supreme Court ruling played out differently in each state, but in Oklahoma, Glenn's sentence and all others rendered before 1976 were commuted by the Oklahoma Supreme Court to life with the possibility of parole. From there, his direct appeal failed, and financially, he was unable to mount anything further, which made the parole board his only viable avenue at the time.
I stayed in for 48 years because my innocence was my burden. So it was more of a luxury to be guilty. Guys enter guilty pleas for all kind of atrocious crimes. But they go up for the parole board and they tell them, I feel regret and I feel remorse. I take responsibility for my crime. And they give them a parole, let them go. 6 to 18 months, they'd be back in again. They let them go again. But I went up for 30-something years saying that I'm innocent and was denied because I didn't show remorse, I take responsibility. Notwithstanding the fact that the victim's sister wrote them a letter, sent them a video deposition, telling them, I don't think Mr. Simmons killed my sister. I think my sister and Mr. Simmons are victims of the same crime.
In addition to the victim's sister, the prosecuting attorney, Bob Mildfelt, also came forward.
Like 93, the first letter he wrote telling him that he think I was innocent and I didn't get a fair trial. I took it to the parole board and they accused me of forging the letter and denied me. And so at that time, we was going up annually for parole. So the next year, I had Mildfelt to write the parole board himself. And he wrote him and told him, he said, this is one case I'm sure a week later, the verdict would have been different because of all the unasked questions we had. You know, he described the description that didn't fit me and all of this. It's in letters that he wrote to the parole board.
The exact quote is very powerful. When talking about Belinda Brown's description of the assailant at around 6 foot, 200 pounds, quote, a physical description greatly different from Glenn's stature at the time. The jury on that day, at that time, found him guilty. However, quite candidly, it was one of the few cases I've been involved in that the verdict a week later could easily have been different, end quote. Yet, he was denied by the parole board again in 1996, but Bob Mildfelt's letter was not a dead end. It gave Glenn an idea that up until then, he hadn't had the funds to follow through on.
In the 90s, Glenn strikes up a relationship with a woman on the outside and they get married. And she dies about 6 months after her and Glenn get married.
My wife left me some money in an insurance policy. And so I took the money and I hired a private investigator. I gave him a list of what I wanted, but he came back with 10 times more than I had on the list.
His name is Mike Noble. And Mike ended up talking the Edmond city attorney into turning over the entire file from Glenn's case from 74, 75.
If you remember, Belinda Brown seemed confused at the preliminary hearing about whether Glenn and Don were the men she had identified in the lineup. His private investigator turned up the original lineup that seemed to have made Bob Mildfelt so confident in that idea at trial.
From what we can tell, the only thing the prosecution had was the actual lineup that had the names of the people, you know, spot one, spot two through seven. And it has the date, February 7th and 8th. And so it's not a report. It's just a lineup. And then there are stars above Glenn and Don's names. That's it.
Then in the file from the Edmond City attorney, that lineup sheet was accompanied by the report of who she actually chose.
And so in the report, it says Belinda Brown, subject number 6, confidently, and she's not so sure about subject number blank. And then it talks about her coming back the next day, again, affirmatively IDing subject number 6, and then saying, yes, I am now more confident that subject number, and the report has a blank, is the other suspect. The actual lineup that had the spot 1, spot 2 through 7. Glenn was 2. Don Roberts was 4, Delbert Patterson was 6, Leonard Patterson was 7.
She consistently said, I picked number 6. You see, she never picked Glenn Simmons from the lineup. All the way through and all the narratives is attacking the witness. Well, my thing is give the witness the benefit of the doubt because she told him who shot her. She told him exactly who she didn't pick nobody else. She never did pick me.
She picked Delbert Patterson and then the report says suspect number and it has a blank. So we're not actually sure who the other person was that she picked because this report that was not disclosed and discovered 20 years later is blank on who it is. Now, there's a lot of other surrounding evidence to make us believe that it was Leonard Patterson. Leonard and Delbert were out killing people and robbing people at this time. They had weapons that matched the type of caliber that wounded Brown and killed Miss Rogers. They were suspected of having been in the area. The sketch of the suspect looks very much like Leonard Patterson. Matter of fact, I put pictures of Leonard in the brief I wrote along with the composite sketch. It's a striking resemblance.
And as we mentioned, Delbert and Leonard Patterson matched Belinda Brown's description of her assailants.
6'2", 200 pounds. And where this would lead to, clearly, is police conspiracy cover-up. There's no way I could have got to that defense table without the police hiding the reports because the witness told him who shot him.
And it appears that Bob Mildfelt and everyone else, including Belinda Brown, were just led to believe that she had chosen Glenn Simmons and Don Roberts by the lineup sheet that had been marked with stars. It's entirely possible that Bob Mildfelt found out about the treachery after trial, and perhaps that's what compelled him to write to the parole board on Glenn's behalf.
I asked him about it. What happened a week later? And I concluded that he didn't ever have the reports until after a week after the conviction. Now, check this out. He was an upcoming prosecuting attorney, just successfully prosecuted two first-degree murder cases and a high-profile murder case that was hard to solve. His career is supposed to have been skyrocketing, at the very least. But when I ran into him years later, he was the public defender for the juvenile division. And he stayed there for years and years until he retired.
Perhaps he made that career choice considering what he was led to do to not only Glenn and Don, but also the victims, Carolyn Sue Rogers and Belinda Brown.
You had the victim pick who it was, Delbert and Leonard Patterson, who were already in custody for doing the exact same shit that you're looking for these two suspects on. And then you hide that report and you pin it on two other guys. Now, the big question is, why? My speculation is, we got those two black guys. Let's get a couple others.
And this was done with a crime that carried an automatic death sentence.
There's a name for that. Attempted murder. Nobody would want to talk about it because it's real explosive. But it happened to me, and I'm going to talk about it. Not only was it attempted murder, it's accessory to murder because you assist the perpetrators in getting away after she told you it was. It wasn't just no miscarriage of justice or no misidentification. You know, it was deliberate, conscious and deliberate. It wasn't no mistake.
You've loved on iHeartRadio over the past year and giving you an exclusive first look at the biggest new songs coming in the summer of 24.
Witness music history. iHeart Innovator Award recipient, Beyoncé.
iHeart Icon Award recipient, Cher.
And performances by Justin Timberlake,
Green Day,
TLC,
Jelly Roll,
Lainey Wilson,
Tate McRae,
and your host, Ludacris.
Our 2024 iHeartRadio Music Awards, Monday, April 1st.
Watch on Fox, starting at 8 p.m., 7 central.
Bring a little optimism into your life with The Bright Side, a new kind of daily podcast from Hello Sunshine, hosted by me, Danielle Robay,
and me, Simone Boyce. Every weekday, we're bringing you conversations about culture, the latest trends, inspiration, and so much more.
I am so excited about this podcast, The Bright Side. You guys are giving people a chance to shine a light on their lives, shine a light on a little advice that they want to share.
Listen to The Bright Side on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search The Bright Side.
For as long as I can remember, I've been fascinated by the depths of human potential and the incredible things that humans can do. So I became a cognitive scientist, studying all the ways in which we think, create, make decisions, and work toward becoming who we want to become. I'm Scott Barry Kaufman, host of the Psychology Podcast. I'm a cognitive scientist, and I've written 10 books and hundreds of articles on topics such as intelligence, creativity, well-being, narcissism, introversion, and education. The Psychology Podcast is a place where we investigate the different ways in which we can unlock human potential, and where I get to interview some of the most extraordinary and fascinating people, and we have real conversations about what it means to achieve success and what it means to be human. So join me, Scott Barry Kaufman, on the Psychology Podcast, where we investigate the depths of human potential. Listen to the Psychology Podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
So Glenn goes and takes the rest of his money that he got from his deceased wife and pays an attorney to take this report back into court. This was Glenn's first post-conviction or habeas. It was a straight Brady claim, essentially. You got to turn over exculpatory evidence to defendants. But it's a skeleton pleading. He doesn't lay out why this report is so consequential. And if you are going to ask a judge to overturn a black man's murder conviction, you have to come correct. And throwing something that you found that is good evidence, exculpatory evidence, onto a skeletal pleading that doesn't lay out why it's important and how it completely takes out the base of the state's case, where the government and judges have no choice, That's what you got to do to win these things. You have to give the government, prosecutors, judges, no choice but to see innocence. And then hope at that point that the prosecutor, judge, pardon and parole board, governor, whoever it is with the authority you're asking to make this decision, has a conscience on him. Well, the lawyer in the 90s did not lay it out. He said, this is new evidence. This is Brady. You got to give us a new trial at least. And did not show that this report not only is Brady, but it proves Glenn innocent. And he just didn't lay it out correctly. Well, the attorney ends up getting shot down in state district court, takes it to the Court of Criminal Appeals, basically a speed bump on the way to federal court, goes to federal court, district court. They don't do anything. Glenn runs out of money. The attorneys don't even bother trying to do anything in the 10th Circuit.
Meanwhile, Glenn and Don had been trying their hands at the parole board each year.
We went up for parole 2005, and we both got majority of the votes from the parole board. But the governor turned us down. In Oklahoma, even when you get majority, it's still up to the governor. And so he turned us down, stipulations to come back up in 3 years. But by the time 08 rolled around, I had two or three misconducts. They started letting cell phones into the penitentiary. And I had a cell phone. And so that was on me. If you got a write-up, then you can't go up for parole. And so I missed it that year, and he got out, and I didn't. After that, politics changed, and it was hard to get out.
Glenn faced denials in court and at the parole board, even with this report proving that he and Don Roberts had not been identified by the victim. And since his attorney raised the evidence on appeal and was denied, it became procedurally defaulted. Eventually, it took a convergence of events and people to bring about justice in this case. First, Joe Norwood's work freeing two other innocent men put him on Glenn's radar, while media coverage of Glenn's case did the same for Joe.
The local reporter in Oklahoma City, Allie Meyer, did some fantastic reporting on Glenn's case. Glenn reached out to me and asked me to get into the case. And so I read the transcript, some of the reports, and it was clear Glenn was innocent. And at that point, I knew what I had to do. It was the end of 2019, early 2020. I spent 2 years investigating, putting it together, making sure we had everything.
In addition, Glenn's evidence of actual innocence could finally be raised again in court. This time effectively, as a new court ruling came to pass.
Fort Knott versus Crow. It's a 10th Circuit case. It's deal with newly presented evidence. Now, if you can make a colorable showing on actual innocence, then the judge would drop all procedural bars and let you proceed if you got newly presented evidence. And so we came with a new presentation of the evidence. You're still attacking the witness and going with the same narrative. We switched it all the way around.
Glenn had been battling this case for decades, long before I ever came around. He knew all this stuff inside and out, and he pointed out to me quickly. He's just like, listen, Belinda Brown was right. She picked the right guys. I think that's who did it. And I put that in the brief. And so we ended up filing Glenn's case in mid-2021, and the evidentiary hearing ended up being set April 2023. We ended up putting 15 witnesses on the stand. We had an expert in eyewitness identification that looked over the case and rendered an opinion that Belinda Brown's identification of Glenn in court is just not an identification at all. We ended up having total 12 alibi witnesses that testified that Glenn was in New Orleans at the time. Bob Malfeld testified. That report was not in the file, and acknowledged that that report does a lot of damage to the state's case. It impeaches Belinda Brown's testimony.
Unfortunately, Bob Malfeld didn't have any information as to how or why that report was missing from his trial evidence, as well as who might have starred Don and Glenn's names on the bogus lineup sheet. But fortunately, all of this was playing out across from the newly elected DA in Oklahoma County, Vicky Behenna, who eventually joined their motion to vacate. And on July 20th, 2023, Judge Palumbo vacated the conviction, ordered a new trial, and Glenn was released on bond for the first time in 48 years, 1 month, and 18 days.
That was the moment. That was the first moment I stepped out, you know, into freedom when they took the cuffs off. And I walked out of the courtroom unescorted. That was it. Like being born again, like the umbilical cord had just been severed. You see the picture that I took with my hands up in the air? I think it's on my GoFundMe. And it's been getting better every day.
Shortly after this, in September 2023, Vicky Behenna said that they didn't have sufficient evidence to move forward with a trial. It was still a far cry from being declared innocent.
Vicky Behenna, she objected to Glenn being found actually innocent. So we had to fight that out a lot.
Oh, here's what she said. One of the witnesses is still alive and sticking to her story. We can't find you guilty, but we're going to let you slide. I'm like, bullshit. I responded that I'm sticking to her story too.
The victim's opinion is that she identified the right people. Well, you damn right she picked the right people. It was Delbert Patterson and Leonard Patterson. And Miss Behenna is correct. We need to respect her ID.
As they damn well should have way back in 1975.
So they didn't have nothing to do but to throw it out. There was no defense for it.
In December 2023, Glenn Simmons was declared actually innocent, clearing the path for his civil litigation. But as listeners of the show know, that can take a very long time. In addition, as we record this, Glenn is undergoing chemotherapy as he battles a stage 4 cancer diagnosis, so he needs your support right now. As he mentioned, there's a GoFundMe. It's going to be linked in the episode description, so please give what you can. And with that, we're going to go to closing arguments. It's where, first of all, I thank you two amazing men, Joe Norwood and Glenn Simmons. And I'm going to turn off my microphone, kick back in my chair with my headphones on, and just close my eyes and just listen to anything else you have to share with me and our phenomenal audience. So, Joe, you go first. That's our tradition. And then just sort of hand the microphone off to Glenn, and Glenn will take us off into the sunset.
You know, we've covered it. I don't view this as a grandiose statement. It's a historic case. He's the longest serving wrongful conviction in the history of the United States. He was sentenced to death and eventually found and proven by clear and convincing evidence to be innocent. I don't have to say any more for people to understand the gravity and what this case says about our system.
I'm planning on trying to launch my nonprofit. And my nonprofit's Grace, Redemption, and Salvation, the perfect formula for reintegration. So I want to get into this reintegration thing. I got this plan by this wraparound support system for guys coming out. There's a lot of guys in the same position that I was in, even worse, because they don't have the support that I had. And some of them getting ready to be released. Now, my objective is to curtail recidivism, because these statistics, 72% of all inmates get out going to return back to prison within 6 to 18 months. And this statistics has stood for 20, 30 years. For them numbers to stay that consistent, then somebody deliberately got their hands on the scale. And all I know is prison in and out. And like I said, I've seen guys, brilliant guys who got college degrees and all kinds of skills come back over and over again. And I've often wondered why. Why do they come back? They don't come back because they want to. They come back because they haven't had time to adjust. They haven't had time to make the transition. They haven't had that wraparound support system. And so this is what my nonprofit gonna entail. And I would like to focus on the women in Oklahoma. Quite one of the best kept secrets is that, and you don't hear politicians or journalists or nobody talking about this, Oklahoma is number one in incarceration of women. And they have held that dubious distinction for 30 years or more. And I'm not just talking about the number one in the United States. I'm talking about the world over. And nobody mentioned this. It's just like, you ask the questions, why? You know, is the women in Oklahoma more inclined to be criminals? Are they more deviant than anybody else? And nobody's going to answer that question and say, yeah. And if you can't answer that question and say, yeah, to that question, then it's got to be the legislators. We are a nation of laws, right? So it's got to be the legislators that are doing this. So, you know, we really need to rethink and reconsider the way we do this criminal justice and the way we apply these things. And so this is where I want to dedicate some of my time and effort towards, because I've had firsthand experience with it, you know?
Thank you for listening to Wrongful Conviction. You can listen to this and all the Lava for Good podcasts 1 week early by subscribing to Lava for Good Plus on Apple Podcasts. I want to thank our production team, Connor Hall and Kathleen Fink, as well as my fellow executive producers, Jeff Kempler, Kevin Wardis, and Jeff Clyburn. The music in this production was supplied by 3-time Oscar-nominated composer, Jay Ralph. Be sure to follow us across all social media platforms at Lava for Good and at Wrongful Conviction. You can also follow me on Instagram at It's Jason Flom. Wrongful Conviction is a production of Lava for Good Podcasts in association with Signal Company No. 1.
And artists you've loved on iHeartRadio over the past year, and giving you an exclusive first look at the biggest new songs coming in the summer of 24.
Witness music history. iHeart Innovator Award recipient, Beyoncé.
iHeart Icon Award recipient, Cher.
And performances by Justin Timberlake,
Green Day,
TLC,
Jelly Roll,
Lainey Wilson,
Tate McRae,
and your host, Ludacris.
Our 2024 iHeartRadio Music Awards, Monday, April 1st.
Watch on Fox, starting at 8 p.m., 7 central.
Bring a little optimism into your life with The Bright Side, a new kind of daily podcast from Hello Sunshine, hosted by me, Danielle Robay,
and me, Simone Boyce. Every weekday, we're bringing you conversations about culture, the latest trends, inspiration, and so much more.
I am so excited about this podcast, The Bright Side. You guys are giving people a chance to shine a light on their lives, shine a light on a little advice that they want to share.
Listen to The Bright Side on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search The Bright Side.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets
and help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters every afternoon. I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen.
And I'm David Gura. Listen to The Big Take and Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.